Welcome to Starfleet Universe On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I run SFB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just for a reminder how to join us, we have a talkcast every Thursday night starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either join us on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444, and just follow the directions, and the call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web, just go to the TalkShoe website at www.talkshoe.com and search for call ID 17702. And if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, if you need to reach me via Skype, my Skype ID is FranzGames, FranzGMES. And of course, you can follow me on the Twitters. My account there is sfuoncall. I already spelled it out, so you know what it is. And then there's my personal account on Twitter, which is Paul Franz. So to find me on that account, that's twitter.com/PaulFranz. That's P-A-U-L-F-R-A-N-Z. And of course, as normal warnings go, that is also my personal account. So you might, there are other things that you might see there that if you're offended by Catholics, don't follow me there. And of course, I have my Franz Games account for my business. So that's FranzGMES. And of course, this lovely TalkCast, Guest Note podcast, available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. And of course, if you follow me on Twitter or go to the Facebook page or go to the Discord, you know, there's all kinds of ways to find it, which including the discussion board on StarfleetGames.com. I also post the link to the YouTube live feed for the week. And of course, some quick news from ADB this week. They did actually release two newsletters this past week on the 10th, despite the attack of the 48-hour plague, which cost everyone two or more days of work. Steve Cole was busy working on, of course, those newsletters that were published, the blogs, Shapeways, and other projects. Steve Petrick is busy working, as he has been working, I think, for months, which on SFB updates, also on the Gornmaster Starship book. Gene was hit particularly hard with the plague, but managed to manage the Facebook page and the Twitter feed. Also, make sure you beat down the spam assault on the BBS, and of course, proofread the communique and took care of customers as she is apt to do. Moving on forward to the SFB Online tournaments, we have, of course, the Masters Tournament. We actually had a game done, so now there are three games completed in round two. And I'm hoping to get going this next week. I'm hoping Sunday when I'm stuck inside, because I'm afraid that it's going to be just nasty all around. I'm not sure. At least that was the original report that I've been hearing. That might change, obviously. But anyhow, and Red 48, which is also stuck, is currently being judged by Ron Brynmeyer. You know, still stuck with one game completed round three. This is kind of getting ridiculous. I might actually start just sending out individual emails myself because it's getting crazy. As a reminder, there was a client update that was sent out. Actually, I did fix the internal update for the SFU Online client. That's good for PC and for on Unix, Linux boxes, free BSD, that kind of thing. It works on those. It will not work on the Mac. The Mac, just because of all the security and so forth, I have to basically send out a new DMG file so that you can then install it. It's DMG? No, I think it's DMG. I think it's a package file these days. But anyhow, moving onward to the library update for this week. And we didn't get any more complete conversions, but I do have hope in that. Looks like that Jason sent a request for background images to Steve Cole for the Paladines, and we got them. So hopefully we'll get most of the Paladine converted in the upcoming week, because Frank already said that he would be able to do them this weekend, which would be awesome. And also we removed some ones which we found out were like basically conjectural, which we don't want. We figure we'll remove all conjectural ones from the library. I don't think anyone's actually using the conjectural ones. And I haven't heard any complaints about it yet. And obviously, if there is something that you want kept that's conjectural, please, you know, raise your hand and tell us about it. So actually, yet to be converted, actually it now decreased down to 899 from 906. So that's seven of them that got removed, which lets the percent complete rise up to a whopping 73.0%. Actually, it's like 72.965. So I just rounded it up. It's like, oh, good grief. To me, it's close enough to 73.0 that it ain't. I'm rounding. I'm allowing myself to round that one. So with that is the news for this week. Welcome to Starfleet Universe On Call. You are with me. Hello. I know I probably changed the beginning part of that. But anyway, hello. You have reached me. And tonight with me is just Dave, which is fine. You know, Barry's probably off gallivanting around the United States, driving wherever he's. Actually, he should be in Fredericksburg, or at least that's what he mentioned last week. So. That's good to hear, Dave. Thank you. Dave's mentioning how my feed is actually good this week, which is interesting. But I'm glad to hear. I'm not. Thank you, Lord. I'm just going to count my blessings now and not take them for granted. So tonight, what we're going to do is, because unfortunately, last week, Barry and I got discussing about Starfleet SFB Online and recording, which is obviously one thing I really wanted to accomplish more of this year. Be able to, in some case, cast, if possible. If not cast this the moment, at the very least, get some videos of it, especially I'm going to start with my own video because that's when I know where I'm going to be. I know when it's going to happen. I can post it and I can get full game because I can be there all the time. The hard part is not knowing other people's schedule because that's one thing that Patient Zero was mentioning on the YouTube comments, which is, of course, they want, I want more action. Well, that's not what the stream is actually meant for. But definitely, I think that's a good idea to post the more, quote-unquote, action, but more with commentary and hopefully get more people interested in it. And even as I mentioned with Barry last week, hopefully maybe I can get someone to test out some speed SFB. I'll have to figure out exactly how to handle it all. Possibly have to modify the client a little bit to help that. I think that'd be a fantastic idea, is to set up timers, and might actually have to finish implementing the fully pure impulse activity feature. Because many, many, many years ago, when we had the big, big argument, the big brouhaha about call for fire versus pure impulse activity, there was one thing that was pointed out by Les LeBlanc, was a big surprise there, is that even with, quote-unquote, pure impulse activity, there's still the meta gaming happening, which is you click the activity button when you have activity to do. And in theory, someone can click the activity button and do nothing, could sit there, wait for a few minutes, then hit no activity, and there's nothing, and just kind of try to fake a guy out. Which is basically, it's all psychological, what's called metagaming. meaning you're not actually playing by the rules. What you're doing is trying to get a psychological advantage just from your own actions, not actually actions in the game. You know, and obviously that's kind of frowned upon, and Lord knows. I'm sure if you get anyone to start talking about metagaming, though, I must admit, I think metagaming isn't considered as bad as it once was because of now it's considered, because if you think about all these kind of esports, part of esports is that metagaming. The whole idea is a psychological factor in it. Though it's in the case of also a pure metagame, it's not really. It's kind of, it is psychological in nature. Because what you're trying to do is you're trying to divine information about the game that is not related to the rules of the game. And well, getting back to that, I was looking at, okay, what can I do with the client, which is. I didn't really add the call for fire feature. What I did was I added everyone just decided, okay, when you call for fire, you use the displacement announcement section and use that to call for fire. And then you define what you actually are going to fire on the, you know, define that. And then there's the pure impulse activity, which is you just announce it. But there's still, as I mentioned, there's still that metagaming aspect to it, which is if you click the activity button, you're assuming that there's an action that the other person is going to take. If it pops up, says, hey, click your activity, there's an assumption that your opponent clicked the button because they have activity. And that's fine, but it's still metagaming. So I thought about it, and I figured, okay, actually, I didn't quite, this wasn't all mine, but I forget, I think it might have been less. But basically came up with the whole idea of the way to completely avoid that, is both players have to hit the next button. You can either hit the next button, which means no activity, or you can click the activity, you know, basically after you do movement, then you basically kind of click, it's kind of like the activity automatically comes up, and then you can say, okay, no activity, and then the other person says no activity, and boom, just automatically moves on. And that's always comes up no matter what. And then of course then there is, I think the way I wanted to implement it was pretty simple, which was if you had activity, you bring up activity. If you didn't have activity, you hit next. The same thing as no activity. So though basically they're synonymous, but next and no activity was synonymous. And as long as everyone agreed that no one had activity, i.e. everyone picked next, then you just continued on. So basically what you do in that case is you remove the actual idea of a controller. Every player is a controller. Every player has to hit the next button. Now, obviously, there's still some issues there. Because you still have the issue of, oops, I forgot to do something. Can we go back? That still is not solved. You can still do that and still do something. But here's the thing. If you usually going back, you do that at the behest of your opponent. I.e., if your opponent says no, you can't go back because of, you said no, you know, you missed your opportunity, we're moving forward. Now, obviously, that could be a big issue if there was a midterm speed change, and especially if you had done a midterm speed change to bring yourself to a lower speed. What do you do then? Don't know. So, I think, you know, I think the whole going backwards thing is less of an issue. Though I must admit that it might slow down the game just a tiny bit, because next people are going to think about that a little bit more than they have done in the past. But, you know, but I think if we were to actually implement a time feature for SFB to implement speed SFB, then that's when that would come into play. Because of you would have, a person would have about 30 seconds, and you have 30 seconds or whatever time limit is set to click the next button. If you don't click the next button, it's automatically clicked for you. You have 30 seconds to click on activity and enter activity. Now, here's always the difficult part about activity. And it's not usually figuring out what you want to. Well, sometimes it's figuring out what you want to do. But after you figure out what you want to do, then there's the problem of interacting with the client to define what you want to do. If it's actually something that the client doesn't handle, actually it's a lot faster to do, because of all you're doing is writing down text. And the same, it's one of those catch-22s in my mind, because in a way you want to keep the game moving, but also you want people to use the client to define, like example, you want people to use, you know, the client to define their midterm speed changes. You do the speed plots. You want them to use the client to do the hit and run rates. You want them to use the client to define what weapons they will be firing. Things like that. That's what you want them to do. But the problem is that takes time, and therefore, you know, they might just, to speed things up and make sure they get their orders in time, they might eschew the client interface and just, you know, type it in. Boom. Firing four phaser ones facing you. Boom. Now, obviously, the timer would have to be retracted in the case of damage allocation. You know, so these are kind of issues with speed SFB that you run into. When it comes to the client, obviously in real life, it's a lot simpler. Because you just have a timer sitting beside you, you hit the timer, boom, you keep going. Okay. I did not mean to actually go on to talk about speed SFB again. But, you know, as I always say when I post this on the discussion board, topics are subject to change without notice, and guess what? The beginning topic changed. Now, last week, I did mention the following, which was I wanted to talk about Starfleet Warlord both this past year and this upcoming year. I think I went over these news videos resolutions, which I didn't do so hot in. And what I wanted to do was focus on what's going to be this upcoming year, what the plans are for this upcoming year. So, I figured I'm going to do is I'm just going to review this real. I'm just going to go through this real quick for those people who did not listen to last week's episode. I'm not going to force you to listen to the whole last week's episode just to listen to this little part. So, I'm going to be nice. There were two. Goals for the year, which was one, to have a browser-based aid utility, and also better advertise and push beginner games to encourage people. Now, that's one thing I have to get back to. To the person who wanted to start a beginner's game during, he said, you know, he'll see if we can get some people together. But you know, we weren't gonna, it wasn't going to push it because of the Christmas season, was upon us. Well, it is now 2 weeks after Christmas season. You know, the whole New Year's is done. So I have still haven't heard from him. So I need to contact him and say, are you still interested in a beginner's game? Because it's not that I can start up a learner's game, because that's one thing I did do with, this one guy. I can't remember his name off the top of my head. It's been a little long. But, you know, I got him to play for a while, and then he got real life happened, and he stopped playing. And, see, here's my concern on free games. People, because it costs me time to run those, but it costs them no money. So there's no, it's cheap. They're more than willing to go, oh, it's free. Okay, I'm just going to disappear off the face of the earth. Now, my guess would be if I actually, for a learner's game, you have to pay, let's say, $10 for a learner's game to play 10 turns, $10, and you basically have to pay up front. I think most people would be a little more invested. Of course, that definitely wouldn't increase the number of learner games, the people learning about the game and actually playing it out and testing it out and seeing how they like it. But that's another story. Now, of course, my stretch goals were also working on automated running of turns. Currently, they're completely manual. Let me continue. I'll get back to that. And get the engine to work on Linux, FreeBSD, and Mac. Basically, anything other than Windows. The whole idea being that then the orders can be run on a server. Now, but I think it'd be a great idea because right now I'm running it on Windows, and even that seems to be there's some glitches. I need to actually get on Facebook because I saw someone mention it, and what I need to do is have people tell me when there's a glitch in the engine, because it's been happening in the past year. Okay, this is the first time I've heard about it. This is really a goofy kind of thing. It's like, well, the reason why you've probably seen it the past year is because the past year I've been using an actual newly updated compiled version of the engine. In which case, that means either Harbor, which is the compiler I'm using for compiling the Clipper app, or there's a glitch there, or there's actually the code doesn't match what it's supposed to be. And there are some bugs in the code. There's one which I figured out what the problem is. It was with the, what was it? It was a custom brace where you actually could specify what kind of ship you have and so forth. And if you combine two letters, it would crash the engine. And I forget why. And also, originally I was going to, there was another issue, which was with the GIFs. GIFs would crash. Then it took me a while, but I finally figured out why GIFs crash. That's because of when you run a standard game where you actually have GIFs, you can gift people EAPs. It assumes a different database. Yeah. Crazy, huh? Assumes that the database is completely different. There's an additional, I know at least one column, there might be two columns, that assumes that are there if you're going to do gifting. If those columns don't exist, it crashes. Big surprise. Especially because the way Clipper works. Let me just explain that just quickly. Clipper, it's basically DBase. It's something really weird. Because basically, your variables can be either variables that are local to the program, or those variables are actually columns in a record. Because basically DBase/Clipper, which is based off of DBase, It was a record manager. And so it was inevitably tied in the language itself, which is really goofy. If you think about it, because these days we have the whole concept of a sequel where you run the sequel and actually you send this off to a driver and then get back the results. This is inexorably tied to the program is tied, I mean, explicitly tied almost, to the database that you're loading for it. It's a weird concept. Of course, back in the days of DOS, you know, this was normal, and I can see why it was normal. You know, it simplified things because you didn't have to worry about the whole idea of processing text. You didn't have to process text to figure out, okay, what is the actual query, then pass it on to the database engine and all that, that whole concept was so heavy. Because if you think about it, it really was heavy because in the beginning, yes, we're talking about the origins of the universe. No, in the beginning, before SQL servers, there were record managers. All something simple. For those who don't know what a record manager is, basically think of a record manager as an Excel spreadsheet where you have the columns there and you define what the name of the column is, and then you can define the text, the data in that, and each row is a record. Basically, that's what it was. You know, obviously it's a little more tightly bound in that each column had a type. It was either a string or a boolean or a number, and actually it was a number. It only had numbers in there. So it was a little more tied than what an Excel spreadsheet is. Now, Excel spreadsheet is most loose about the data that's inside the cells. Now, it could be either text or it can be numbers. It can't be both. But on a row-by-row basis, it can be different. But in a record manager, it has to be the same, period. There's no change. Excel is one thing chasing a rabbit here. Actually, I looked up Beetreef, and actually, they're still selling it. Actually, they brought it back. It's still expensive. I'll get out, which was interesting. I think I actually kept a copy of Beetreef. I think I might have kept a copy. I'd have to check my old box because I have a box of old software. I mean, old software. You can't run it anymore. But the only reason I have a copy of it is because mainly the manuals and so forth, just remembering these old products, which were at the beginning, you know, that kind of thing. Just kind of, I try to keep those mementos down to a very minimum because Lord knows, 1,400 square foot house. Come on. That was the funny part. I was listening to a podcast this past week, and this woman lives in a 900 square foot house. So it's like, wow, you live in a large shed. You know, 900, that's, if you have a 10 foot wide, you're 90 feet deep, you know, or I think 30 by 30. Yeah, 30 by 30. 30 feet by 30 feet. That's one big room there. That's 900 square foot. You know? So, moving on. Now, a couple things that are happening, actually. Dirk. This is going to be interesting, actually. Because I'm wondering if he still has his partner in crime is still with him, because Dirk many, many years ago, actually, let me do this one quick thing. Da-da-da. Dirk, there it is, because I'm wondering if back in the day, there it is, yeah, we had a discussion, Dirk, me, and what was the other guy's name, does it have it here? I do not see his name. No, but I don't see it. But Dirk is still interested in working on this. Now, here's the crazy part about this, and I'm not sure how much this will go. I'm going to let it go for a little bit. At the very least, he can help me work on my APIs, you know, and get them better, work on the server side. This is what Dirk wants to do. Dirk has this idea of basically for $3 to $5 a month, have a really awesome aid, which the person will pay for. And then, with my blessing, yeah, I'll be happy to offer. Because the thing is, I'm not gonna charge him for it, and I'll work with him with the APIs. But the thing is, to have people run, they have to pay me. So if I have a third party produce a client which is better than I can produce, and people are willing to pay him for it, and they'll get a better experience than I can provide, and they obviously encourage people to run turns, you know, to pay for more turns, to be involved in their games, then I think he is the guy. You know, I say, go ahead. You know, now, worst case scenario is that I work with him, I improve my APIs so that I can possibly create my own aid, browser-based aid. Might not be nice as his, but at least I could do that. But so that's worst case. I mean, this is absolute worst case if what he does completely fails. So, and they're going to have to, the one thing that we might have to work on is like OAuth, because of OAuth is a better way of handling things, because with OAuth, people can basically log in to the Warlord, you know, playbyemail.com, their account there, and a token can be passed back to his server. So, I think that would be fantastic. And actually, I think that hopefully will actually become to fruition this year. Given that, when it comes to better advertising for the upcoming year, I think that I can do well. Better advertising is a crazy thing. The question is how to do it. Now, there are certain things that I know that I need to do. I've been listening to release notes. And the fortunate part about release notes is originally these guys were both iOS app people. And what happened is one of them kind of branched off. He originally had an iOS thing for tax preparers, which is, if you really think about it, how often do you actually need that on your phone? You know, information about taxes and things like that. And that didn't work out too well. So he finally realized, you know, I should do this as a website. That didn't work out either, but it did better. And then so that's where he started working on the web. Now he's actually got an actual service for tax preparers. So you can see how he first created an iOS app, which was for that target audience. Then he moved to web for that same target audience. And then he completely dropped his, he had another one, which was basically it was a Franklin Planner app, and it broke. And so he completely dropped it from the app store, so it's gone. Because it broke, and he decided it's not worth the effort to actually fix it. So he's completely onto web, this kind of thing is called Relevant? Basically, whole idea is it's a service specifically for tax preparers, so they can have like encrypted communication with their clients, and so they can save, you know, because come on, we're all have this issue that if we ever try to communicate with our tax preparer, we want to do it securely because we're sending very private information. So you don't want to send that in for using email, right? Please tell me you have not sent it using email, because if you have, please, please, please don't do that ever again. If you haven't already been bitten, because who was it? I know it was Dan, a coworker of mine. His ex-wife, using Yahoo, send his tax information. All the tax information from to the tax preparer from the Yahoo account to the accountant, to the tax preparer. And of course, we all know about Yahoo and them getting hacked and all that kind of thing. And what happened? I'm not sure if it was this past year, but the last couple of years, someone else had submitted a tax return in his name, using all his information, to get a refund. Now, here's the fun part, was that he actually owed money. So, and then he has tried to convince the IRS that, hey, yeah, no, I'm real. That was a fake return. So, anyhow. So, don't do that. But anyway, the whole idea, the reason why I even discussed that podcast is that one thing that they talked about is landing pages. The whole idea is that you have a single purpose page. And that idea is it's called a landing page. You have nothing, you don't let people get out of basically there's no escaping the landing page. It's very focused. The whole idea is a person click on the button to sign up, to get their information about possibly name, definitely email address, and the first name and last name at the very least. Which is, if I have a landing page that I have to, this is one of those things that most people say, oh, I'll just do this. Like, I can't. Because it's not that. It's the third or fourth thing down the line. In this case, one of the things down the line is that if I do a landing page, the idea is to have people sign up and actually join. To lessen the friction, I have to make it a free account. Easy enough to do. Not easy enough to do. What it requires me to do is they send it, they quote unquote register, but it's not really register, it's pre-registration. Because the whole idea is that you name, last name, first name, email address. I get that information, then I send them a link via email to confirm that email address is good. I have to figure out some way of doing that so that it was not spoofable. Basically, it's not guessable. That probably will require me something to do something minorly cryptographic. Doing a crypted hash and using salt as a random number, and then have that number then saved locally on the web server on a temporary basis. And then if the person clicked that link with the cryptographic hash as part of it, that will then confirm that email address. And at that point, then you create the account. And then other things ensue. The whole idea at that point is then you send them an email. In this case, okay, after that, then we have to do what is called I forget what it's called. Dang, this is awful. On basing. The whole idea is basically to get the person engaged. And in my case, if the person signs up for an email, then the whole idea would be I send them an email talking about a learner's game. Do you want to get started? You know, and then talk about a little more about this. And if you want more information, okay, you can click on this link, or, you know, and if nothing happens, then possibly send them another. If nothing happens for like a week, then send them another email saying, hey, notice that you didn't respond to the last email. You know, are you still interested or whatever? You know, this is the kind of, I have to think about a workflow for this. I think there's packages. I have to go back, check on release notes. That's the podcast. To see what they talk about when it comes to that kind of email workflow. Because it's one thing that you'd want, the whole idea of that is to minimize the amount of work you have to do and therefore automate it as much as possible. The one thing that actually was talking about was actually contact. He's a business-to-business kind of thing. So he actually hired a kind of, let's just say a Mechanical Turk, but not really, a virtual assistant to help him generate leads onto other companies, which is actually, what was it he told me? Cold contacts. He hadn't got a lot of good response from cold contacts, but got better response from, I think it was emails or something else. He said, I think it was the last, not the last one. I think either second to last one or third one before, or, you know, three back. But, you know, he talked about how the cold calling, you know, the scraping of the websites, the confirming good, has not been the most way to get good leads. There was another process which was like he heard about. It's like, oh, that's what, it's crazy. Well, I think it was, I know it was, wasn't exactly spam. It was targeted marketing via email, so it's kind of like spam, but you know. It's one of those things you try not to be spammy. It's like, okay, if you're interested, you know, give me a call. You know, and that's one thing that he said that for him, you know, because it's business to business, they want, and because it's small business, tax preparers are a relatively small business. At least that's his target audience, which is small to medium businesses, not the large tax prepared firms like, H&R Block, you know, things like that. So, but anyhow, that's the kind of process I have to get in, the kind of workflow I need to get in for Starfleet Warlord is an onboarding. That's the term I'm looking for. Onboarding process to help engage the people to actually play the game. And again, it's one of those crazy things that if we do this, then I have to do this, 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 and this. To have it all ready and prepared, I got to do certain things. For example, one of the things that I would probably want them to do is to sign up for a learning game. Now, currently, it depends upon the response. Because also, part of that response would be getting people to get to the landing page. I'm not sure how much response I'd get, you know. But at the same time, if I get, let's say I get five people to sign up, and five people want to run learning games. Learning games take me, assuming all learning games are completely electronic. I'm not going to take any manual learning games. Forget that. Still takes me like 15 minutes per game. So that means with five games running, that means I spend like an hour and 15 minutes per day. Depends upon how quickly these people respond. And obviously, if I can get a learning game, if I can automate that process, one, it's less for me to do. But more importantly, what I think would really help people to do with that onboarding process and the high idea of automating the learning game is that people would be more engaged. Because you can automate the process. Yes, it's still asynchronous. You have to submit, here's my orders, blah, 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 blah. Okay, I submit it, but then give me like 5 seconds, and all of a sudden, bingo, I have my turn. I have my orders. I have everything. Everything's generated and brought back to me. You know, because I talked about this 2 years ago, maybe two or three years ago, the whole idea of having an automated game that people can play while they're waiting for the next game to start. And then possibly even have it so that you can get a score for that game, and then I can, like, the top five, you know, give them the reward of, you know, 5 free turns or something like that. You know, that kind of thing. Maybe give them a $5 or $10 credit to their account, which obviously it's a credit. It's not money. It's credit. So if they would just say, I would like to get my money. It's like, but you never paid. So you never paid. You don't have money. You have credit, but you can never withdraw. You can use it for playing the game. That's about it. So, anyhow. So, obviously, one of the things that I want to do is work on automating the running of turns. Because that can automate the learning game. It can, and see how things just kind of flow. You know, you have it so that you fix one thing, then you have to do another thing, you have to do another thing. And that's why I can't do the landing page until I get all these other things in line. In theory, I could do the landing page, but I'm always concerned, as people point out, you only have one time for a first impression. So if you do not give a good first impression, you're screwed. Just go home. You won't get that new person. And one thing I want to do with Starfleet Warlords is get more people. And if I can automate this whole process for Warlord, holy cow, this thing can just go really big. At the very least, it can go a heck of a lot larger. Especially if you can get a lot of people going at the same time. Now, obviously, this is always the issue with having multiple players playing at the same game, where it's a turn-based, which is at some point you have to time the person out. Currently, there's an assumption that you have a 2-week lead time. And of course, with a multiplayer game like Starfleet Warlord, you need to give people time to talk. This isn't about a game. This is not Fortnite. This is not this real-time strategy game where you are actively working on the game. And it's going quickly. That's only the actual fleet fights, the building of your corporation, all of that, you know, expanding to different sectors and finding out what's there, and then conquering those worlds. All of that is only one aspect to the game. One of those big parts of the game, if you're not doing diplomacy, if you're not making deals with other players, you're not playing Starfleet Warlord. And that's part of the game. Now, so it's quite interesting to see how this whole thing works. You know, the whole thing is part of the game. So, given that the case, you have to give people a minimum amount of time. I mean, you have to give because everything can be automated, let's say they give them a week between turns, a maximum of a week between turns. But the turns will be run as quickly as possible. When everyone gets their turns in for that turn, the orders will run, everything will be executed, and boom, the results will be sent out. And then you have another week to submit your order, a maximum of a week to submit your orders. And at that point, then we have the whole issue of, okay, what happens if they don't submit their orders? Then the automated process will say, okay, we're going to run your turn without any orders, and then you get the results. So, and that's one of those things that's going to be really tough, you know, because that process is going to be a lot different than people are used to. And Lord knows, I think in some cases, I think people would actually like that, because Lord knows, I hear, if you ever on the Facebook group, I want to get that right. And that is that you hear people complain, oh, where's orders? Where's the turns? Where's the turns? Well, if it's completely automated, so there is no, okay, I need to type them in. I'm not typing them in. For those automated games, no. It's all aid. Whether it's the web-based aid or the aid that you download onto your computer, either one, it doesn't matter. Same thing. So, and of course, I said, you know, obviously getting the engine working. Oh, that, I want to get a report on that. And that is, before I got online today, one thing I did a little bit of research on Warlord. And it looks like, I have not done any testing of this, but I should be able to do this. Looks like you can pass in command line parameters into the turn. Now, I have to look at the engine stuff a little bit, because the engine stuff, I might need to do some finagling into that. I might have to split things up into separate files so that I can create an automated engine versus basically have two engines. One is one which is the interactive engine. The other one is completely automated engine that you run from the command line, and then that stuff will do the different, in this case, menu items. And it will execute those different things, which I think would be fantastic. It's so cool if I can get that done. But I have to look into that and see what I have to do to completely separate so the engine can be completely automated. But as I said, it looks like that. Also, the Linux, you know, basically the non-Windows platforms. Looks like I should be able to do that. Looks like Clipper does support global variables. I have to check to make sure this all works fine. Obviously, I'm going to do this like on a actually, there's two things I have to do. Number one, I have to fix up all of the file names, all of the directories. Because here's the problem. This was built in the days of DOS. I believe it or not, DOS still exists. People, it's still used for certain things. Obviously, one of the things that can be used for is embedded, because it's really, really small. Though this day and age, more embedded systems are using things like Linux or NetBSD or things like more real operating systems, or QNX. But anyhow, built in days of DOS. The thing is, when built in days of DOS, case didn't matter. So if you said /SFW. That's the same as /SFW. Those were the same thing. Well, that's a problem because of the code itself for Warlord. That code doesn't... The code itself doesn't keep the casing 100% consistent. So that means... Actually, in theory, if I can change all, like, basically it's called a use command. If I can change all of the use commands to function calls, I have to check to see if the, I think the open, There's a function called open files, which I think actually does all these use commands. If that is the case, in theory, what I can do is force all uppercase or force all lowercase. I'd have to think it through. My guess is all uppercase. Either that, or I can do the easiest way is doing all uppercase or all lowercase. The other way, obviously, is to look at it carefully and see if it should be uppercase or should be lowercase. Because of like things like the aid files that get generated, those need to be uppercase. But when it comes to Linux and all of them, directories being lowercase, that's standard. Having directories that are completely uppercase just looks kind of weird in those environments, which is why, you know, it would be probably better if I just fix them up to be the proper casing for those. For example, for like the directories, make sure they're all lowercase. For the files, make sure they're always all uppercase. And say at least I want to make sure that I don't have to process things if I can avoid that. I don't want to process the string. Say, oh yeah, everything but the last backslash, you know, everything up to the last backslash, because that's all uppercase, or you know, last slash, whatever, probably backslash, and do it that way. But I would like to avoid that, you know. You know, just make it a little more explicit and so forth. And you know, this might actually work out better than expected. So hopefully I can work on that and that can be done. So the major things for basically the New Year's resolutions for last year are the New Year's resolutions for this year. To a certain degree, the better advertising changes into creating a landing page and for a Starfleet warlord. And that's number one. Number two, have an automated process. Currently, the reason why I have a $1 sign-up fee at all is to cut back on spammers. That people... Because Lord knows, I still have to, every once in a while, I have to go in and clean up accounts because they register an account because it allows you to create an account, but it doesn't actually let it be active until you actually pay your little $1 fee. So I never get mentioned about that. Now, obviously, the one thing about that is that... We got all this. I still get these crap accounts, but so every once in a while I still have to go and clean them up. So, I think we will end it there. Had a nice discussion about Starfleet Warlord, both the past and the future, and it. Currently, the future is looking bright. It should be interesting to see how Dirk, what he creates. And hopefully he will create a beautiful product and people will be willing to pay for it. And if they aren't willing to pay for it, maybe I could engage him in some other business opportunities. Whether it meant have me kind of buy his service and then I pay him a monthly rent for the aids, or buy his software and have it so it runs on my servers. Or something along those lines. So it should be interesting. So with that, I am Paul Franz. And I bid you a good night.